Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, it's one of those shows I'm really excited about. You know, I kind of promised you that we would do a college football extravaganza, if you will, as we head into the first full weekend of the college football season. And, you know, sometimes the best laid plans don't work out. This time the best laid plans worked out. Chris Landry of NBC Sports Radio and also LandryFootball.com. He joins almost 50 minutes with Chris. He's fantastic. So much stuff. Talk about Ole Miss, South Alabama, Alabama, Florida State, NC State. We talk about the state of college football, conference realignment, playoffs. What's the future of the Power Five, the Power Four, the next five, all of that. So much to get to. Chris is great. Former college coach, former NFL scout, a guy who's still so connected throughout the game. You'll love it. If you like college football, you'll love it. If you love college football, you will, you'll probably listen to it twice. And then on top of that, Andy Staples, my good friend, Sports Illustrated, he joins us as well. We talk a little bit about the Ole Miss NCAA case and then get into weekend number one of the college season. Andy will be at Alabama, Florida State, and then he's going to hang around in Atlanta and cover Tennessee, their opener as well. So against Georgia Tech. So all of that coming up to you in just a little bit. So a lot of college football, about a half hour with Andy. So a really good show. One of those shows that, like I said, I'm excited about. You guys are going to love it. I don't talk much. I let other people talk. I just sort of sit back and let them bring a lot of college football knowledge to you as you get ready for the first big weekend of the college football season. So I hope you enjoy it. I think you will, and I'm excited about it. I hope you will be excited as well. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. Highway 6 West in Oxford. It's right next to the Oxford Exxon, so you can go fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then get filled up at the Oxford Crystal. 79 cents original crystals all day, every day, right now at the Oxford Crystal. 49 cent wings Saturdays and Sundays. So Ole Miss and South Alabama Saturday night at Vaught Hemingway. And then on Sunday, there's some college games as well. So you can run over to the Oxford Crystal and you can fill up on wings and have a football party of your own after you go to the game on Saturday. And then we still have the Mix 5 for 5 featuring the Spicy Chick. So that's there as well. So much at the Oxford Crystal. And you can still shake up your combo for a buck. Hand-spun shakes with Oreo, strawberry, vanilla, chocolate, whatever you want. They've got it there. The Scrambler Breakfast Bowl combo is back. Sausage, egg, cheese, all that stuff there. The combo with the hash browns and the drink of your choice, coffee, orange juice, whatever you want. It's right there at the Oxford Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. You call that number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple at Clark Ford. And then what you do is you get the quote. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. It's a great deal on a great vehicle. And then it's up to you. If you insist on shopping on it, you just can't trust a car dealer. Okay. It's cool. It's up to you. Shop it around. You're eventually going to come back to Clark Ford. You're going to love your deal, and I'm going to make it even better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on this podcast. Say, I heard about it on the Oxford Crystal podcast, the one where Neil talked to Chris Landry and Andy Staples. $500 off. If you don't want to say all that, and instead you just want to say, hey, I heard about it on the on the Beer Garden. I heard about it on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Either way, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. It's really that simple. You'll be glad that you did it. The podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. Community Mortgage is 30 years old. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you know you are getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's JLOWE at communitymtg.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, and the best products and pricing in the industry. Whether you're looking to supplement your current income or find a better career opportunity, email Ben at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. They're looking for motivated individuals with some sales experience, a business degree, or those who are close to completing their business degree who have a passion to serve small business owners. They have an exceptional uncapped commission structure, and they are an equal opportunity employer. Email Ben today, benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. I basically flipped the coin to see who would go first. Chris Landry won. You're going to love hearing from Chris, LandryFootball.com. And right now he's got an offer that you're going to hear him talk about in a minute to help the victims of the flood in Houston and the Houston area. If you've been watching that, the footage is devastating, but yet so many people have stepped up to help. It's really cool, and Chris is doing his part as well. You'll hear him talk about that in a minute here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Here is Chris Landry. All right, Chris, the last time you came on, there was a storm in the not a storm necessarily, I guess a tropical depression, and there was a lot of rain in South Louisiana, and I'm back with you again, and you're back with us again. And this time, man, we have watched a devastating storm hit the Houston area, and I know you have friends and stuff there. I do as well. And I've been watching all day J.J. Watt doing his thing with UCaring, and they've raised more than $4 million. Everyone's trying to do his or her part, which is awesome. And I know you're trying to do as much as you can there at Landry Football. Before we even get started, I've told people for a long time how great your service is, and now not only can people get Landry Football, but they can contribute to the relief aid efforts in Houston by signing up now. What can you tell me about that?
Well, you know, we did it last year. Of course, my hometown of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, was affected by floods last year, and in trying to help and put supplies together and do what little things we can do to try to help people, I began to think, well, what can we do to try to get other people involved? And I said, you know, got a website and people are listening. Some people always say, how can I help? What can I do? And I said, you know, this is a way. I tell you what I'll do. I'll take any subscriptions that I get and I'll give 50%, and I'm not going to take the money and give it somewhere. I'm going to take the money and go buy supplies and give it to the shelters for the people that are in need. Well, you know, we find ourselves with our neighbors to the west in Houston and all up the coastline of Texas that are really struggling. It's heartbreaking to see what is going on over there. So we're doing the same thing at LandryFootball.com. If you buy a membership, 50% is going to the flood relief victim. So we're taking the money right now, and we've got a group in Louisiana called the Cajun Navy, and they left yesterday with over 150 boats to help with the rescue effort, and there's a truck leaving every day to Houston. They're going to fill up a truck with supplies, cleaning supplies, baby diapers, canned food, whatever they get feedback that they need, that's they're going to fill it up with. So literally just taking the money, and it may be a little thing, and I know that it's not millions, but it's a little thing that you know that you're doing some help. Going to some of the shelters last year, seeing the look when a young child gets a comb, I went home and cried. It's devastating to see. So, and anyway, it's football season, and certainly we're proud of what we do at LandryFootball.com. But what's more important than football is what's going on right now in real life. So it's just a little way of saying, look, folks, if you have an interest in football and you have an interest in what we're doing at LandryFootball.com, check us out. For a $99 a year subscription, we'll take $50 of that money and put it towards a relief fund. If you get the $50 discounted package, we'll take $25 and, again, give it to the relief victim. So that's what we're doing, and it's just a little thing, no big deal, but we're trying to do everything we can to help these folks. And hope that they can find some, I don't know, excitement, Neil, some sure, you know, into this football season and this big weekend of college football. Hope it could provide some, you know, I don't know, comfort, some distraction from what is a very, very dire situation.
Yeah, you know, you say no big deal, and you know what, I disagree. I've watched so many people, from people like J.J. Watt doing huge things. Lindsey Alexander, the owner of the Rockets, gave $4 million, huge things, to people given the only $5 they have in their pocket. And you see the devastation there in Houston, and you know how many of those people lost everything, didn't have flood insurance. It's a total loss, and they're just thankful to get out with their pet in their hand. And you're right.
Yes.
I mean, all of those people are going to need help, and you know, this isn't meant to be a political statement, because I know that the president ran on Make America Great Again. America's great, and we have always proven we're great in these moments when people say, okay, I got to help. And so you doing your part is not a no big deal. It's a big deal. Everybody doing their part, whatever he or she can do, is a big deal. And it is what makes the country great. It is what kind of stirs your heart and stirs your soul a little bit to see the Cajun Navy going over there and just doing what it can. It's awesome. It's cool, because you know, when Katrina happened, so many people from Houston went to New Orleans to help. And
yes.
And now, people in South Louisiana and all over are returning the favor, and I don't know. I think it's cool. It makes me, it warms my heart, not only about the country, but about kind of humanity a little bit.
Well said, no doubt.
All right, you mentioned football, so let's talk about it. I'm going to start here, because we've at RebelGrove.com have probably done a pretty crappy job of preparing for the first game. Been so much focus on the NCAA thing. If I'm honest, our analytics show that that's what our readers want to read. They want to know what's going on with NCAA stuff and all of that. And so we've given it to them, probably at the expense to some degree of some of our normal camp coverage. We did have Tyler Siski on, the wide receiver coach at South Alabama. We had Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator, on. We've talked a little bit about the Jags. They're rolling in here on Saturday. What do you know about them? What kind of team does Joey Jones have there at Mobile this year?
You know, it's a pretty good team. You know, the quarterback's a good little player, Dallas Davis. They've got a couple of good quarterbacks, actually.
Yeah, the other kid's actually starting Saturday.
Yes, you know, so I think that, you know, it's going to be an interesting year, because they can move the football on offense, and this is a team, we know what they've done, and obviously how well they played the early part last year. They're very capable. There's only three returning starters on offense, but they can score points, and it's not the ideal game. It's the game that, you know, maybe sounds easy to people that don't follow the game, but people in the Deep South know that Joey Jones does a great job and has a good program, and I think going to be quite a test. Now, I think Ole Miss will win. I think certainly if you know, their head's in it, they absolutely should win it, will win it, and I think they'll be too much, and they'll be too explosive offensively for South Alabama's defense. But you never know. First games, you know that And this is something that you hear a lot about. Well, they're coming together in the locker room and they'll play hard. I expect them to play hard, play well, but you don't know how things are going to work. And we can all sit here and speculate. The reality is we don't know how the season's going to go for Ole Miss, and we won't until progressively this season takes hold. I mean, I think there's a legitimate chance they could be 3-0 before going into Alabama. Before the bye week, before Alabama, or, you know, there could be, you know, a rough spot at Cal in week three. So, one by one, I think this is a chance for them to get off to a good start and to maybe get some positive momentum in what has been a very difficult off season for the kids.
Yeah, there's no question it has been. People just, I don't know that some people fully grasp everything that's going on around the program, the stuff that you can't talk about. I mean, the kids themselves are not being recruited by other programs, but the people around the kids are being subtly recruited by other programs. That stuff gets back to kids. They hear about what's going to be a 2 or 3 year bowl ban. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but that's the rhetoric that they hear, and it's distracting. There's no way that it's not, and you can talk all the talk about insulating and keeping everything inside these walls, but they're not little football machines. They go home, they go to class, they have social media, they have cell phones, they hear from people, they know the conversations that are happening, and there's no way that you're not at least to some degree distracted. It's not possible.
No, you're right. In today's age, as you mentioned with social media, they're inundated with information. Now, to get them to understand that they've got to block it out and most of the information is not accurate, well, that's fine, but you're right. They can't avoid it because it's everywhere. It's on your phone. Who doesn't have a phone? I mean, find anybody that's walking down the campus or walking down the street or in a restaurant that's not glued to their phone today. So they're aware of what's being said, and obviously everybody that they're associated with, friends, girlfriends, family, distant relatives, close relatives, you name it, they all get inundated with what's going to happen, and everybody knows somebody, and we got inside information. Nobody knows, but they think they know, and they speculate, and of course, there is going to be a lot of distractions of, hey, what do I do? What's best for me? I came here for a certain reason and a certain goal. Those are not going to be there for me like I thought. Is it better for me to go somewhere else? It is very easy in this situation to put yourself before a team. It's just human nature, but that's kind of what brings a team down, and we're not talking about the program down, but it brings a team down, and I think the challenge has got to be for Matt is just, hey, look, we will decide in this locker room how this season will be defined, and our focus is going to determine how good of a season we can be. There's no reason why we can't surprise people, shock people even with our play. We've got nothing to lose, and let's make every game like a bowl game, and let's have the best record we can. Make this, we're going to play, we're going to prepare, we're going to go through all the off-season program. Let's make it one that we can remember and remember for positive reasons. On the other hand, you get off to a bad start, people start kind of questioning one another, then it becomes a really big challenge for anybody, an experienced, you know, 20-year coaching veteran to handle, much less somebody that's getting thrusted into this position unexpectedly as of a few weeks ago.
All right, I'm going to talk about LSU and BYU, but first I'm going to get to the important stuff with LSU. Have you had a chance to go see Mike the Tiger yet, the new Tiger?
I have. He's very cute. You know, I was there when, and I don't remember which one, I guess it was the one two Tigers ago when I was on the staff in the 80s, when it was a little baby, even smaller than this one is. And in fact, it was almost like a kitty cat small. What I did not know, and I learned then, and I don't know how many of your listeners know this, but when a tiger is a baby, their feet are as big as their mother and their father's feet. I mean, so they're like a little kid walking in their dad's slippers. They're just kind of flopping around. They don't know what they're doing, but they've got these big feet. And I remember, give you an idea how small it was, we actually could hold it for some of our team coaching pictures, but they're a lot stronger than they know. And I remember the coaching shirts, the golf shirts. We had a couple of them got ripped. this one was is a little bigger, yeah. And it is cute. And I think they're going to do things differently. I think the days, and you'll remember, I think the days of putting it in the cage and putting it behind the big, you know, pickup truck and driving it around the stadium, I think those are over. I think they feel the stress level's not good. And with PETA and, you know, more knowledge going into that, I don't think we're going to have that. I still remember, Jeff Fisher tells a story all the time. Of course, I work with Jeff in the NFL, but Jeff was on the USC team in 1979, one of the more famous games in Tiger Stadium. LSU lost it. USC was number one in the country, Charlie McClendon's last year. But the remembrance that he, Anthony Munoz, Ronnie Lott, to this day, they all tell me the most amazing experience they ever remembered in college was coming out of the visitors' locker room. That's where they park Mike the Tiger, and they would poke the Tiger, you know, not the Tiger itself, but the cage that he was in, and they had a microphone. So when that came out and it had that big roar, it said visitor players, their eyes were like saucers. Yeah. But and you know, I think those days are gone. Maybe sadly, maybe correctly, but he's very cute, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of little features on it. As we move forward with the new mic.
Oh yeah, it's. I tell people this all the time. It's my favorite place to go to a game, and I grew up in Louisiana, but I wasn't an LSU fan. I mean, I kind of grew up an Alabama fan, honestly, but I grew up in Ruston, so we went to Tech games and stuff, you know, and so I mean, you know, we didn't cheer for LSU, and but going to games there, and the Tiger and the Golden Girls and all of that stuff, all the stuff that those traditions are the ones that for whatever reason have always kind of resonated with me. And when the last Tiger got sick and he didn't make it, I mean, I was upset. I mean, you felt terrible about it. Now you see the pictures of the new one. I kind of feel cheated that the Ole Miss LSU game is in Oxford this year. I mean, I got to find an excuse to get down there and see it. All right, let's talk about the game. It was going to be in Houston. Unfortunately, it can't be in Houston. They're going to play at New Orleans instead. I doubt if that affects the impact of the outcome of the game at all. Arden Key isn't going to play. What's his status, and does his absence impact that game at all?
Well, I don't think it'll impact the outcome. I think that he would have had a big day had he been healthy and been able to play. I think BYU's offensive front's going to have a hard time blocking LSU's defensive front with all their speed. So I think there potentially was a big day for him. Now, they'll be playing one of three true freshmen. Probably all three freshmen will play. But I don't think it's going to have a huge impact in the outcome of the game. As I said, I think that LSU defensively has got a big athletic edge against this BYU offense that's very physical up front. They're not going to be as consistent establishing the run as when they had Williams last year, who's now with the Packers. I just think the speed of LSU's defensive front is going to give them problems. So, no, I don't see it being a huge factor. And the issue with him is just getting him healthy and getting him ready for Mississippi State on week three. And if he can get some reps in against Chattanooga, that's the plan. But I think they want to get him ready for the start of the SEC. And for them, it's Mississippi State on the 16th of September.
Was there more to the whole quarterback thing? Was that kind of a generated deal, how long it took for them to name Etling over Miles Brennan, or was there something to that?
Just competition. I think that through the process and giving, first of all, you have Danny Etling last year that played with an injured back, and he played injured most of the year, and he played through a lot of pain and kind of really won the team from a leadership standpoint, but there's no doubt he's limited physically. He's the most experienced guy, but they use this offseason and time to work on getting good reps for young players and young opportunities there for, as it turned out, Miles Brennan, clearly emerged as the number two guy, is the best of the young bunch. Now, that's for two reasons. One, you need to be prepared with Etling's injury history to have your number two ready to go, because he's one play away from being a number one. Miles Brennan is mature behind his years. He's put on about 18 pounds, Neil, and he's thin as a rail. I mean, he looks like a small forward that, you know, or a two guard that's just a skinny little basketball player. He's got to grow into his body, and they've done a good job. Tommy Moffitt's done a good job putting weight on him, but he still has a ways to go. Depending on how the BYU game goes, I think they'll get him in for a series or two if they can. I think they'd like to get him in for some reps against Chattanooga, because I think, again, they need to be prepared to put him in if they have to, if A, Etling gets injured, or B, he just struggles. I think that the offense is going to require good decision-making, as it always does, but Matt Canada is going to run a lot of shifts and a lot of motions. And with that, you've got to have good timing and good leadership and good decision-making at the line of scrimmage. And I think at this stage, at least, Danny Etling is best able to handle it. But I see a little bit of Tommy Hodson and Miles Brennan in his ability to be able to see things and his mature behind his years, beyond his years, as you remember Tommy Hodson.
I do, yeah.
As a freshman, we went on the road, and I saw him. He get injured. He bit right through his tongue at Kentucky, and he ended up, you know, playing against A&M and winning on the road when A&M was really ranked high at the beginning of the year. So he had early impact, and we'll see if Miles Brennan, he might get that opportunity to do the same.
That's a heady comparison. I mean, it really is. I mean, Tommy Hodson was a hell of a good college quarterback.
Yeah, he really was, and I think this kid has the opportunity and the chance to be really good. I like the way he throws the football. Went to a couple of the scrimmages and practices. He's got to grow into his body, quite frankly, a lot like Tommy needed to. Tommy Hodson was a better basketball player in high school, and that's what he wanted to do, and his body needed time to develop. And I think Miles is very similar in that he's more in tune to football. He's a gym rat, and that's going to really serve him well.
All right, I covered Auburn for 6 years. I covered, I think, just about all of Cole Kubelik's career, and Cole was a hell of a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great quote. He was a fun guy to cover. He's now doing
TV. He's still a great quote.
Still a great quote. He's doing TV. He went out the other day, and I'm told, I didn't see it, but I've heard this from numerous people, he put NC State in the playoffs. Has Cole had too much head damage, or is he on to something?
Well, I think that I don't see NC State being in that category, but I like where he's going because it's one of my sleeper teams. This is a very good defensive front that they have, and I think that they're a very good team, and I don't see them getting through the ACC and getting into the playoffs, but I see them being a real factor. I think that they're, in terms of just having a really good year, and they're going to be a team that people are going to talk about, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute, they came out of nowhere. So I think, Neil, like a lot of people, kind of want to be ahead of the game, because if you say it, it doesn't happen, it's no big deal. But I think South Carolina is in for it. They're going to have their hands full against NC State Saturday. And then, you know, if you look at it, Marshall, Furman, I don't see them going to Tallahassee and beating Florida State. But I could absolutely see them beating Louisville, going on the road, beating Pittsburgh. I could see them beating Notre Dame over there. So I absolutely could see them as a 9-3, 10-2 type team. They are really that good defensively. They're just not all that deep. I like Ryan Finley at quarterback. I don't love him, but I think their ability to run the football and play good defense absolutely gives them a chance to have a really good year. And I see them, you know, again, in a division that's very tough. They're looking up at Florida State. They're looking up at Clemson in terms of talent. But if you asked me who is the better team, NC State or Louisville, I tell you NC State. Louisville has Lamar Jackson, and the likelihood of being able to win a big game when they match up is key and probably gives the Cards the edge there. But I think NC State is legitimately a top 20, top 25 team, no doubt.
All right, let me ask it this way, and I mean this so hypothetically. I mean, if just by chance you happen to know somebody who was in Vegas, right, and they, mm-hmm. they just said, hey, you know, for kicks and giggles, I might lay 7 points NC State against South Carolina, would you say that would be a good wager?
Yeah, no, I think so. This South Carolina team is, and I'm very curious to see how this is. Obviously, it's played in Charlotte. I like this South Carolina team, but I think this is a little bit more experienced North Carolina State defense, and I would definitely favor the Wolfpack in this one a little.
All right, a team that I like to surprise a little, not playoffs or anything like that. I'm a little bullish on Vanderbilt. They go to Middle Tennessee. Middle always gets up for Vandy. Obviously, it's a huge game, you know, there in the Nashville area, Nashville, Murfreesboro, all that kind of thing. Am I buying too much of the way Vanderbilt finished the season?
No, I think they'll be good defensively. And I think I actually think that they are motivated, and they hear a lot about in the, you know, Middle Tennessee area, how Middle Tennessee is ready for them, and they outplayed them, and the game means more to Middle. I think I'd be very surprised if, even though I think Middle's got a good offense, Coach Stocksville and his son, they can throw the football around. I like this Vanderbilt defense, and I like them in this game, and I like their chances certainly to start off 2-0. Now, you get into September, I like them. Kansas State is going to be tough. let's finish September against Alabama and at Florida, and then come back in early October with Georgia. I'm not sure that at that point we're going to be talking about them in the same way. I mean, they'll still be pretty good, but I think after that four-game stretch of Kansas State, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, and that's right before they get into Ole Miss, they'll be softened up a little bit. That open date on October 21st is going to be much needed. I don't know that they go through that four-game stretch in very good shape.
All right, let's talk about a few of the big games this weekend that everyone's talking about. Obviously, the big one, Florida State and Alabama, there in Atlanta and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The stadium's fantastic. It's a huge. Huge kickoff for a new stadium and all that stuff. Two great programs that are figured to be in it all the way to the end. Two quarterbacks that, you know, kind of cut their teeth a year ago, and I guess we're looking for improvement from both Francois and Hurts, but kind of how do you handicap this game?
As I looked at it all summer, I really thought, you know, listen, this Florida State team is very talented. Defensively, they're very good. Their secondary is outstanding. They've got beef up the middle to defend the run, and then I think they have the ability to get good outside pressure. It's a very good defense, and I think Florida State's kind of built like, and you know, as is Clemson, like SEC-type teams. But as it gets closer, I'm just constantly reminded how well Alabama prepares for games like this. Two things jump out at me. A, how much better is Florida State's offensive line? Listen, last year they struggled. Putting on the tape and watching Coach Trickett's line, that was just not very pretty. Okay, they'll be better. Okay, it's easy to say how much better. Well, you better be a whole lot better against this Alabama defensive front, because they can make an improvement look like not much of an improvement. So that's the one thing I want to look at. And then DeAndre Francois. To beat Alabama, you've got to either have a great quarterback or a quarterback that plays great. Ole Miss fans will know this.
Sure.
Great quarterback play, got it done. And listen, you cause some turnovers against Alabama, and they end up chasing a great quarterback around. All of a sudden, that's kind of the kryptonite for Alabama. So how well will DeAndre Francois play? He's going to have to play really well. Cam Akers is a kid that's got a lot of ability. They're talking a lot about. They tell me there, and I've seen bits and pieces of him, and he's really good. Jimbo and them tell me he's another Dalvin Cook. So, you know, I don't know how quickly he can be another Dalvin Cook, but listen, this is a very talented team that Alabama's playing. It's the toughest matchup personnel-wise of all the early games that Nick has played, but I still look at Alabama and say they're going to pound the football at Florida State. They're going to run with Bo Scarborough and three other backs that are going to be outstanding. And I still think that there's an edge there. And I'm not so sure as it's getting closer and closer, Neil. As I said all along, all summer, this game's going to be close. This game's going to be good. I hope it is. But I'm starting to get the feeling it'll be good, it'll be close, and in the second half, it might be Alabama pulling away. I don't know. I can't wait to watch it and hope it's going to be closer. But that's kind of how I'm getting to feel like how it's going to be.
Is, if that's the case, and Alabama, let's say Alabama beats Florida State 2 touchdowns. Who's left on Alabama's schedule that realistically can beat them?
I don't. Auburn is the only one, and it's in Jordan-Hare, and if Jared Stidham's healthy and playing well, we know what that game can be. I really don't see it. LSU plays Alabama tough, but I don't think they can beat Alabama. I think Alabama would have to lose it, I think those are the only two. I don't see that. Alabama, you can beat Alabama, but Alabama really has to help the cause. I don't see it happening. Now, I think the real key is, I think Florida State and Alabama are both national playoff caliber teams. So, if Florida State is beaten by 2 touchdowns, how does that affect their national playoff status at the end of the year if they run the table? Now, that's not going to be easy either, because Miami's good. We mentioned North Carolina State. You got Florida at the end of the year. You got an ACC championship game potentially, so might have to beat a Miami twice for all we know. You know, Clemson, we know how difficult that's going to be and have to win at Clemson. I still think Florida State can get in it, but I think a close game would certainly serve their cause, and we just have to see how that would stack up against, you know, the winner of the Big 12, the winner of the Pac-12, how that plays out. But I think the safest pick would be Alabama getting into the national playoffs. I think the best chance of getting Alabama is this weekend with Florida State week one. That's the best chance. Not the only chance, but I think it's the best chance.
As an aside, I've never asked you this. I'm curious. Do you like the playoff system the way that it's set up right now? Would you like to see it expanded? Would you like to see it scrapped, or is it cool the way it is?
I like it. I think it's an improvement. I'm fine with it now. I think eventually we're going to go to 8, and it may be too much in people's eyes, and it may bring in some, I don't know, watered-down element to it. But, and I'm thinking it through as we go, Neil, but I think right now we have, obviously, a Power 5. We might eventually get down to a Power 4. But I do think that it would make some sense to have the conference champions get in with maybe a stipulation. We don't want to have an 8-4 team in one of the Power 5. And it's very unusual that it would happen, but it could, theoretically. You have a team that's an 8-4 team, win their conference, and they make it to the playoffs. I think we need to have some stipulations. But for the most part, if you win your conference, you're in. And then the best teams that are not conference champions get put in. Then at least we're inclusive to where everybody who legitimately has an argument is in. You see, I think you're going to always have arguments to, should this team get in over that way? I mean, you would have who's 8 versus who's 9, but really it's kind of like the college basketball tournament. You can argue who's in it, who's not. But really, the team that is deserving of playing for the national title is included in that tournament. And I think if you get to 8, that's where I think it would be maybe not the best matchups, but I think it would be the fairest way to encompass everybody through the course of the season. I think we've seen the playoffs become pretty average, hadn't we? I mean,
yeah.
We've seen a Michigan State get blown out, Washington get blown out. I mean, I think we could say that the playoffs are maybe a little bit, you know, we thought we'd have, you know, 4 great teams, but the reality is sometimes, at least in the first couple of years, it looks like there are 2 teams that are clearly the best, and they prove it in the playoffs, well, you know what? That's okay. I think that there's an element to if you win your conference, you know, and you're USC and you start off slow, you're really good at the end of the year, maybe you deserve a shot. I think that element is coming, and I'm on board with it, but I think it's going to take several more years for us to get that.
So you dropped a little something in there that I find fascinating. I'm a big conference expansion guy. I think it's fascinating. You said go into a Power Four. So obviously you're implying that you believe the Big 12 will fall apart when the grant of rights ends. Where do those teams go in your opinion?
Well, let's wait and see what Texas and Oklahoma want to do, because we all know that it's one phone call away from that conference just falling apart. I mean, you take Texas and Oklahoma out, and it's the Mountain West. I mean, it's just with a different name. Certainly the president of Oklahoma had real interest in going to the Pac-12. He has he kind of likes the idea of being in the conference with the Stanfords and the Cals, and that's fine. I don't know if people realize, I know guys like you do that follow it, but I don't know that people realize how close Texas and Oklahoma were to going to the Pac-12. It was really close. I think it really depends on this. We all know that probably the worst deal that ESPN ever made business-wise was that Longhorn Network. I mean, they're getting $30 million. That's a lot of money annually to get for a network. How long that's going to take place? Where is Texas going to go for their money? Can they get a deal somewhere where they can kind of have a little bit of their cake and eat it too? I don't know. But that conference stays alive if Texas and Oklahoma, and mainly Texas, because Oklahoma's kind of just follows in, and they're probably going to go together. That conference stays alive if Texas wants it to stay alive. The minute they say, we're moving on, then the conference is dead. So I don't know. I would have said that maybe the SEC maybe 10 years ago, but I would say that where they would more likely be absorbed would be the Pac-12. I think there's a better chance with that Pac-12 network and the business model that Larry Scott put together that hadn't quite worked. I could see them possibly down the road putting together a package that might allure Texas and then therefore Oklahoma, and they may bring in, you know, because I do think this is where the politicians start to get in. The Oklahoma state legislature is going to make them take Oklahoma State, and then we'll see somebody else go in, and maybe it's Texas Tech, I don't know, maybe it's Baylor. Politics, you'll see them add four, and then I think that could happen. But, you know, I think the expansion is at the point where everybody's taken, you know, everybody's looking. I get this asked a lot. Well, Colorado State just opened up a brand spanking new stadium, and they want to get in, and they should get in the Big 12. And this, but you know this, that you've got to bring something to the table.
The only
schools right now that bring something to the table is the big boys, and I think the Big 12 is where it's at. And I think the Big 12 stays alive if Texas wants it to, and if the Pac-12 can convince them to go otherwise, or Big 10, or SEC, whatever, then I think that's when we go to four. But that's going to be really pivotal, because if you take Texas and Oklahoma and do they go into the same league, that's been the perception. But do they? Could maybe one of them go to the Pac-12, one of them go to the SEC? I don't know that. I mean, it's going to be interesting, because once you get, you know, and again, does the SEC really want Texas? I think they would like to have them, but they already have the Texas market with A&M. So I think that would probably be an impetus for Texas wanting to go out to the Pac-12. So after that, with all due respect to the Oklahoma States and the Baylors and the West Virginias and the Texas Techs and the Kansas States, that's a take it or leave them for a lot of those conferences. They want the big boys. So it's going to be real interesting to see how this if it stays afloat, how long it stays afloat. But we saw the strengthening of the ACC in the Big Ten to try to get into the different markets, that we clearly know that who is the fifth conference among the Power Five, and it's clearly the Big 12, because without Texas and Oklahoma, as I said, they're just a group of five league.
All right, we're going to finish with this. Give me a couple of teams. You mentioned NC State as a sleeper, so they don't count. Give me a couple of teams that you're watching sort of as the early part of the season unfolds to see if maybe they're poised to surprise.
I think that Miami is a team to watch. I think their defensive front seven is as good as it's been in a while. I just cannot believe that. Can you believe when they went into the ACC, we all thought, I did, it was going to be Florida State and Miami every year. Just book that thing. And Miami has not won their division. Maybe this is the year they get it done. That's one of them.
Okay.
I'm a believer in Oklahoma State's offense, but not their defense. I do think that one of those teams among the non-Power 5 to look out for, and they did not look good last week, but South Florida is really good and is capable of running the table, but we'll see. I think Toledo's really good in the MAC. I like Mike Bobo's Colorado State team. I think Tulsa's good. I think Western Kentucky's good. And those are some teams that, and listen, I think Houston's got another pretty good team. It wouldn't surprise me if Appalachian State plays Georgia very well this week. So those are some non-Power 5 schools that I think would be a surprise. I don't know if people would think that it would be a surprise if TCU, because TCU is a good team, but not many people are picking them in the Big 12. I think the Big 12 is wide open. I think they'll be in the mix. I think Virginia Tech's going to be improved. Can't wait to watch them. And Will Grier led West Virginia Sunday night. That's kind of my – and I think Bill Snyder, once again, will have a very solid team in Manhattan, Kansas.
My Warhawks of ULM, I mean, we're looking at, what, 12, 13, 14 wins this year?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see what type of team they have this year. I know that I know you're pulling hard for that. I don't know. Maybe not quite that many wins, but we can always hope, huh?
11.
Maybe. We're talking 1 year now.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. No. I think that Matt's got some work to do there, but it's going to take a little while for them to get into there, you know. So it's going to be very, very difficult for them to get quite that much. You know, you think about that league, though.
Yeah.
How good is that league? Yeah. App State, I mentioned, is very good. Arkansas State's good program. Neil Brown is on the fast track, and certainly a name that you guys are going to be talking about in Oxford is an up-and-comer. We talked about South Alabama and Joey Jones. This is it's a pretty good league, and, of course, Georgia Southern, nobody likes to see them on the schedule early, ask Auburn. So it's a tough road. So the Warhawks have our ways to go. By the way, I still hate the Warhawks. I liked them back in the Northeast days where they're the Indians and they were playing for the Division I AA titles.
You know, it's funny because when I was growing up in Ruston, and you tell people this and they look at you like, no way. But those Tech Northeast games, when they were both what was then 1AA and they were in the
yes.
Southland Conference, man, those games were a big damn deal on the I-20 corridor.
And, you know, good players, as you know, you can build a very good roster in North Louisiana. And even with, you know, some of the kids that maybe don't get offered by the Arkansas and the LSUs of the world, and they're very good teams. And what I don't like is ULM having to go on the road and play Florida State. And, you know, in games like that, that I just don't into Auburn. I just, you know, again, it's not a great situation. It's not fair for the kids. It's not fair for the program. And we know it's great to get the check, but we got to figure out a way, as we just talked about conference realignment,
we
got to figure out a way to take care of these schools to where they can survive and maybe play for some of their own, again, go back to where,
yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if you can see, all right, who's the best team in that league, and let's play the group of five kind of playoffs, and then make that worth something and mean something. And I think we're going that direction, because eventually what we're going to see is the Power Five schools have their own rules, to where you see all these analysts that everybody has now, and, you know, they have these big staffs. Well, that's great, and I think that is is something those big-time programs need to have, should have, but it's not something that you can have at some of these smaller schools. So we got to find a way to filter the money down, but allow those kids to compete and have a chance week in and week out, which that's not the case for 3 or 4 weeks a year.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, and I've kept you way too long, but I love this part of the conversation because I mean, I love college football, and everybody loves college football, and we get into the week after week, everybody going, God, it's the best. You know what? I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but when ULM goes to Auburn and loses 56-3, there's nothing about that that is the best. There's nothing about that that is appealing. Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. And I joke about, because, you know, I got my master's at ULM, and I had a lot of fun there, and I made a lot of friends, and it was a really good time in my life, and I've got my bookcase here. It's got the ULM helmet on it, and so I crack jokes about it, but the truth is, it was more fun probably to go to ULM when they were in the Southland, and they played,
yes,
they played Texas Arlington, and you played what is now ULL, and the Louisiana Tech game was on rivalry weekend, and you know, sometimes it meant whether you got to the 1AA playoffs or not. And I mean, I remember,
yes,
I remember Louisiana Tech, the year that they went, I want to say they went all the way to the AA playoff semifinals or finals. I was a kid, I was in high school, and but they played Mississippi Valley in a 1AA playoff game when Willie Totten and Jerry Rice and all those guys were there. And, I mean, Tech beat the hell out of them. But it was a big deal in Ruston. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a
– Absolutely.
It was a big deal. And it's not that way anymore. And Tech's handled it a little bit better than ULM has. ULL has handled it better than ULM has. But the truth is, those programs go into every season with really nothing to play for.
Well, that's right, and I think that's, to me, winning your conference title should be big. Going to bowl games, I mean, we want to spice up December bowl games. Let's take games where teams that win their conference championship like that play in a bowl game,
yeah,
and maybe the winner of those bowl games lead to maybe some sort of a 4-team playoff,
yeah,
for that, you know, let's call it the, for lack of a better term, a group of five championship. My concern is, when you play Florida State on September 9th on the road for a check, that's going to have a cumulative effect when you play Southern Miss and Louisiana Lafayette the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's where it you may lose to them twice. And that's just not good. It's not fair to them. And then, okay, you end up with, you know, back-to-back-to-back 4-8 records, and you fire the coach. Well, in what planet does that make any sense? It really doesn't, and it's foolish. And you're right. You almost have to. If you want, you have to decide: do you want to have checkbook games to where you get money, which we all need to, but you're not getting. Oh, we're going to get better by getting tested against Florida State. No, you're not. You're going to get better by trying to be competitive and play. Listen, I think it's fine to play Memphis. I think it's fine to play Southern Miss. That's the level that's the highest level you want to play at that point. I think going above that just only is counterproductive.
Well, Chris, it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the time. I hope that a lot of our listeners take advantage of the opportunity to get your incredible service and also help out a little bit more with the people in Houston. I think it's cool what you're doing, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, look forward to it. We've got a lot of free stuff on LandryFootball.com, and, of course, for the subscription part of it, the membership part of it. Listen, it's like getting an NFL scouting department at your service for less than a magazine subscription. So it's a great opportunity, and, of course, you'll be helping a good cause, too. So check us out. We really appreciate it, and always great talking with you, Neil. Look forward to doing it again real soon.
Okay, Chris, take care. Have a great weekend.
You do.
All right, bye-bye. Our thanks to Chris for joining us here on The Beer Garden. The Beer Garden is brought to you in part by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. If you're coming up for games this season, get in touch with Greg. Call Greg Jones before you come up. Tell him what you want, whether it's for your tailgate, whether it's for you're going to grill, you're having a party, whatever. He'll hook you up. He'll have you ready to go. 662-259-2999. The freshest cuts in Oxford. The fantastic bone-in ribeye, filet, the pork from Como Farms, the chicken from Como Farms. I go there all the time. Great sausages. Whether you're having a sausage party, you're having a football party, just throwing some sausage on the grill, some summer sausage. Greg's got it all there. And then when you go in at LB's, on the left, there's a beer fridge. They've got a great selection right now of Oktoberfest, other craft beers. Grab six. Tell them that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. It's just $6. You can't beat that. At LB's in Oxford, 2008, University Avenue. Again, that number is 662-259-2999. The podcast is also brought to you by our friends at Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. Simple logic, they find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that will eventually do business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. They master their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. They bring to the table decades of advertising experience, plus a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To reach them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi, Mississippi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of the year, it's snapper and cobia. But listen, snapper season runs through Monday, through Labor Day. So if you're down there this weekend, you want to catch some snapper, get in touch with John. Do it now. If you if Labor Day passes you by, you can still do some of the inshore trips, speckled trout, triple tail. Call John. It's 228-348-7817. Check out his Facebook page or look at his website, tunachasacharters.com. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer. They work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention that you heard about them on the Beer Garden. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. Chris was awesome. You're gonna love Andy Staples too. A lot of fresh thoughts on the games this weekend. Also, his thoughts on the Ole Miss NCAA case in light of some of the stories that have come out over the last week. So, without further ado, here is Andy Staples of Sports Illustrated. All right, Andy. First of all, thanks. I know that this is a really busy week for you. Appreciate you taking some time for us here. I'll start with this because I'm just curious. I feel like we almost lead off every interview we ever do with this particular topic. Have you had any have some of the new stories that have broken about Ole Miss? So Stephen Godfrey had a story. I've had a couple of stories. Other people, I don't know how many of those you've seen or if you've just gotten NCAA fatigue. As we about 2 weeks away from the – less than 2 weeks now from the hearing – Ole Miss with the COI. Any kind of a gut feeling as to where this thing's going?
Nope, because predicting what the COI will do is a fool's errand.
Any revelatory thoughts you've had reading some of the stuff that's out there? And I, by the way, I agree with you completely. I've told people when they're like, you think it's a two-year bowl ban? I'm like, I don't know, flip a coin, 50-50. I don't know how the NCAA COI will view all of the things that happened or if they'll view the things that have happened. I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to care that Leo Lewis got paid by anybody else. That's how immunity works. When they do it in the legal system, they don't care about the other crimes the guy committed because they need him to flip on the person they need him to flip on. So I would assume it works pretty much the same way here. But it is interesting because we know that the immunity is for him and not for the school. So, but something tells me if you play ball with them and let one of your players flip on somebody, they probably aren't coming after you.
Do you ever have any conversations with coaches about the idea of immunity and maybe where this kind of goes from here? I agree with what you said, by the
way. It's not a new concept. I know it's new to the Ole Miss folks because they haven't had a case dealing with it, but it's not new. So it's not going anywhere. They're just going to have to deal with it. And they got ensnared in it this time. And, you know, look, maybe don't let your boosters turn over their cell phone records to the NCAA. Like, that's some helpful advice from Heloise that apparently they didn't follow.
You know what, man? There is so much of this that really comes down to use a burner phone, for God's sake.
Oh, there's so much stupid in all of it. I wrote the rules on how to cheat in college sports 6 years ago, and they broke almost every one of them.
When you wrote that, Andy, what kind of pushback did you get from people, if any?
None. People thought it was hilarious. There may have been one or two holier-than-thou types, but how dare you? Most people, look, guys get paid in college football. It happens. Anytime you have an arbitrary wage cap, a black market emerges to help fill the void. That's economics 101. So, you know, it's been happening since the dawn of college football, and it'll keep happening. I mean, it just, they keep changing the rules, so they move the goalposts on it, but it'll always happen as long as there's not an open market. The market will find ways to correct.
Not going to spend a lot of time on this because I want to get to some of the games this week, and I know our listeners want to hear about games, but you know a lot of people in coaching. You've been around. You know people throughout the country. This Ole Miss job post-Thanksgiving when it opens up, I'm assuming it opens up. What's the difference in how attractive it is based on a one-year bowl ban versus a two?
Well, a one-year, you're talking about they just accept the one Ole Miss is imposing for this year.
Yeah.
And all's well next year, other than scholarship reductions.
Right.
Makes it quite a bit more attractive. Plus the fact that they're going to probably pay a ton of money. So, yeah, in terms of candidate pool, what they decide, especially with regard to the postseason, will make a big difference, I would think.
All right, let's get to some games. Where are you going this weekend? I would assume Florida State, Alabama?
That is correct, and I'm going to hang around in Atlanta and do Tennessee, Georgia Tech on Monday.
All right, well, let's take those two games first. Obviously, Florida State, Alabama, sexy as hell. The loser is very much in the championship race when it's over. So it's not.
Yeah. It's yeah. not. No, it's not. Super Bowl. This is one of those that you schedule because the committee is going to like you. Either well, there's only one scenario where the committee will downgrade you because of this, and that's if you lose by 40. If you're Oklahoma from last year's Oklahoma Ohio State game, that's the only way this game can hurt you. If you lose by a touchdown,
there's just no way that happens in this game, in my opinion.
I don't think so. I think they're both pretty darn good, and yeah, I can't see one of the team either one of them beating up on the other. So I think it's a pretty safe matchup for both teams. And you know, somebody asked me earlier today to spin a scenario where two teams from the same conference make the playoff, and I was like, I got one for you right here. This is guaranteed two teams from the same league make a playoff. Florida State beats Alabama. Florida State then wins every game here on out except Clemson. Clemson goes undefeated. Alabama wins the SEC. Clemson and Florida State are both making the playoff. So that's how you get two teams from one league into the playoff.
Another way would be, well, yeah, I mean, I still think there's a way Alabama and Auburn both make it.
Oh, I mean, think of all those years when the SEC West was just loaded. If the playoff had been around, there would have been a few where two West teams made the playoff. 2011, specifically, since two West teams made the BCS championship game. So, yeah, it's if LSU or Auburn or whoever else it is jumps up and is really good and they only lose to Alabama, yeah, there's a significant chance that they get in. And I think it's the same, you know, you saw last year with Ohio State and Penn State. Everybody thinks that they picked Ohio State over Penn State. They didn't. They picked Washington over Penn State. And it was pretty close. And had they decided, Washington's non-conference is not good enough, and put Penn State in, you would have had two teams there.
It almost happened in 2015. If the fourth and 25 crazy play in Oxford doesn't happen,
yeah,
and Ole Miss goes on, I assume, for the sake of this discussion, that Ole Miss would have beaten Florida in a rematch in the SEC championship game because Florida.
Yeah, a Will Grierless Florida, yeah. I think that would have been a pretty safe assumption.
They were toast by then. Ole Miss would have gotten they would have won the SEC title. They would have had a win at Alabama. Alabama probably still makes it. And
yeah,
Ole Miss maybe makes it as the fourth. It was one play away, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, that's how intriguing this all is, because the couple things that are going to happen at some point. Two teams from the same league will make it. A two-loss team will make it. You know, we almost saw it last year. Had it been Penn State, both those things would have happened. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
All right. So in this Alabama-Florida State game, the two quarterbacks, they were both kids last year. Hurts was terrific until the end. He wasn't particularly good in the championship game. Some of that may have been because Lane Kiffin wasn't on the sideline, ironically. And then
some of it may have been because Washington and Clemson were the two best defenses they played, and he looked the worst against the two best defenses they played, which is kind of how it should go.
Yeah, stands to reason.
Unfortunately, Florida State's defense is right up there. Similar deal. So, but I think with some time and a full offseason, not trying to win the job, he's won the job. I think he's probably going to be a little bit better. I'm curious with Hurts because, if you go back and look at the early season last year, he was a much more confident passer than he was at the end. And I don't know if that's a case of defenses kind of figuring him out or figuring out what they did, or it just something got in his head. So we'll see what he looks like throwing the ball, because this could wind up being one of the best defenses they play, or the best defense they play. So it may be that he looks about the same, but that's against Florida State's defense, and against everybody else, he looks a little bit better.
Yeah, there were times last season that I thought, man, this kid's unstoppable. He's going to have an incredible career. And then there were some games even late in the year in the SEC when he didn't look – he looked like maybe he'd hit the freshman wall a little bit, if there's such a thing. Francois was up and down too. What do you expect from him in his second season as the starter?
Yes, the things he needed to improve upon were things that you can improve upon through repetition and practice and everything else. It was, hit your intermediate throws, hit your short throws, get the easy stuff down. Because he can make those eye-popping, wow, NFL throws. You know, go back and look at the last throw against Michigan in the Orange Bowl. There aren't many quarterbacks in college that can make that throw. It was pretty. But the problem is, sometimes he has a guy wide open on a square end 10 yards down the field and he misses it. So that's the part that he needs to fix. But that's the part that really you can just fix by practicing a lot. You know, that doesn't require anything God-given. That just requires work. He's already got the God-given part. So he needs a little better blocking, which, from what we've heard, it sounds like they're going to be better up front. The story about the center playing with two torn labrums in his hips, I don't even know how he was walking.
I don't either.
Much less attempting to block, future NFL players against Michigan and Florida. So, I think he's going to be better. They had a bunch of line combinations just because of injuries. So they have a lot of players with experience. It's just a matter of, can they get that right five together? But I think it'll be all right. And getting back to Jalen Hurts, this is what I always come back to with him. So late in the fourth quarter of the national championship game, he gets the ball and he has to take his team down the length of the field for a touchdown. True freshman, national championship game. What did he do? Took him down the field for a touchdown. So that tells you this guy is not afraid of the moment. He'd not been great that game, but when they needed him, he was. And it just so happened that there was a guy on the other sideline who had a little more practice at the take him down the field at the end of the game. And Deshaun Watson did the same thing. But I think, I mean, I look at that with Hurts and I'm thinking, that guy was only a freshman. Yeah. He's only going to get better.
We watched him here early in the season. You know, they fell way
behind. Oh, he could have completely fallen apart that game. And it was like nothing happened.
Yeah, it was 28.
He was 24-3.
Yeah, 24-3, and he had just gotten walloped by Marquise Haynes. Fumbles the ball. Someone picked it up.
Youngblood picked up the fumble.
That's
yep.
right. Youngblood ran it in for a touchdown, and the place was kind of crazy. And this was before Ole Miss's season collapsed. And you thought, whoa, this kid's going to have his hands full. This is going to be difficult. And he completely stayed composed, led drive after drive in that game when they really needed it.
Most people would just be coming off of the sideline, like screaming at the guy who missed the assignment, because that was one of those where there was poor communication by the blockers and Haynes came unblocked. He didn't go scream at anybody. It was like if you or me like dropped a box of pencils. Like, oh, I dropped my box of pencils. Okay, I'll pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was really impressed with him that day, because at that particular moment, if you could have frozen time and said, what do you think is going to happen here? I would have said, this kid's going to have a really hard time.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking, okay, I guess they need to bring in Blake Barnett or something.
Yeah.
To kind of deal with this. And nope. Because he led him right back down the field for a touchdown, and then the defense scored, and then all of a sudden it was an even game. And you're like, how did that happen?
Who do you think wins this first Florida State-Alabama game? And I say first intentionally because I'm of the opinion that they will play again.
You think they play again?
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. I think Alabama wins it. I don't know that Florida State is going to be able to block Alabama's front seven effectively enough to give Francois time or move them enough to get the ball going in the run game. Remember, Dalvin Cook's not there anymore. And I know Cam Akers was very impressive as a freshman, and obviously everybody in Mississippi knows all about Cam Akers, but that's a big ask against the Alabama defense with a line that wasn't, you know, one of the best in the country last year. And you have to be one of the best in the country to move the ball against Alabama.
So you're staying for Tennessee, Georgia Tech, which is to me a fascinating game because Tennessee is one of those teams that is – no one talks about Butch Jones being, you know, on the hot seat that much. And I don't know that his seat is hot, but
– everyone talks about Butch Jones being on the hot seat. Where have you been, Neil?
I don't know.
You've been buried in NCAA land.
Maybe I've been buried in it too long. But because I think if they don't have a fairly big season, Tennessee says, you know what, this is – we got to get in on this. We got to make a move. It's over.
Well, I think if they are in the hunt for the East title in November, he's okay. If things fall apart early, and there is potential for that, just because of the way the schedule sets up, he would not be okay. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this team because it's a younger team offensively. Although it's weird because this will be the best offensive line they've had since he's been there. So that part's good. But you got a young quarterback, and I think Dormady could be pretty good. John Kelly I like as a running back. They still have good receivers. Defensively, I thought, oh no, there's no way they have as bad an injury luck as they had last year, and I still don't see how that's even possible. But then you find out Darren Kirkland hurt his knee in practice, and he could be out up to 6 weeks, and it's like, come on. You know, at least give these guys a fair chance, like a fighting chance to keep their jobs. Because, you know, last year, by the end of the season, they were completely decimated on defense. So I hope they can stay healthy on defense and at least there's, you know, a fair shake given. I don't think their window to win the SEC East was just last year and it closed and they missed it and that's it. But the thing is, it's tough when you beat Florida and Georgia and then somehow manage to not win the East. That's kind of hard to do. And, yeah. You know, we'll see if Florida and Georgia are any better. If they are better, that's a problem, because what Tennessee does not want to see is that distance increasing again between those programs. Right when they get the gap to close, if the gap starts opening again, I don't think the administration is going to be too thrilled with that.
Do you buy any of the Kentucky hype, speaking of SEC East teams?
I think everybody at the bottom of the SEC East is a little bit better. South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt. Which is another reason why, you know, they're going to take wins away from somebody unless somebody really dramatically improved. So be that Georgia, be that Florida, be that Tennessee, if they didn't dramatically improve, they're going to drop a game to one or two of those people. Now, Tennessee will tell you what losing to South Carolina and Vanderbilt does to you and does to a program's psyche. They don't want that. I mean, South Carolina is an interesting one because I thought that was the best job, coaching job Will Muschamp has done as a head coach.
I did too.
Even the year he took Florida to the Sugar Bowl, like he had a three-win roster and went to a bowl game, which is very impressive. And he found a quarterback in the process. So you give him time to stock his roster with the kind of defensive players that he likes to have and then develop them, they could actually be a factor in the East, maybe not this year, but maybe next year. So, I worry. If I'm Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia, I'm worried about all of those teams because they are all a little bit better. You know, Missouri, if they play better on defense, they're a tough out. So, I don't know. I still don't like the East as a division. There's still nobody in there, I'd say, that team can challenge Alabama for the SEC East, or for the SEC title. But it is going to be a fascinating division. And my dream last year was that it would end in a six-way tie at 4-4. It didn't quite happen, but this year, maybe there's a chance.
I'm not going to keep you a lot longer. I'm just like 5 or 6 minutes. So I'm gonna hit a few things quickly. Auburn, Jared Stidham, they get started at Georgia Southern this weekend. We won't find out anything this weekend. But do you – I'm repeating the question here. Do you buy any of the Auburn hype? I mean, I feel like a couple years ago I did this with Jeremy Johnson and I got burned. And so now I'm
scared. I know, and that's what everybody's saying that. And this is a different situation with Jared Stidham, different person. We have seen him play effectively. We know he throws a beautiful ball. But I'm not automatically saying they are going to be the second best team in the SEC, that they are going to be able to challenge. I don't know. I want to see that. And the other question that Auburn needs to answer for me is, how do you replace Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson? Because one of the things that made Auburn better last year was it was the first year in a while their defense had been good.
Yeah.
And their defense kept them in some games. And Montrevious Adams especially, I don't think got nearly enough credit for what he did, because I'm a firm believer that an interior defensive lineman that can penetrate can affect every single play he's in the game.
You know what's
and
funny?
And I think Montrevious Adams did that.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was talking to Greg Little, the Ole Miss offensive tackle, about just last season and his experience and stuff. And I asked him, I said, and I kind of expected Alabama was going to be the answer. I said, you know, what was the defense that you remember the most? And he goes, Auburn, man. They brought so many salty on D
last year. And, you know, that's something they'd been working toward, but they'd never really gotten over that hump. And so I'm not going to assume that they're going to have as good of a defense this year as they had last year. I want to see that first. If they do, and you've added Stidham on offense, hey, you got something there.
Ohio State, Michigan, the Big Ten. Michigan plays Florida this weekend. I'm sure you're more dialed into that than I am.
That game is going to tell us nothing about either team.
Okay, why is that?
Because Michigan is replacing 17 starters, and Florida can't figure out its quarterback situation. So I don't think we can really draw anything from either one, because the two may be completely different teams by week four. So it'll be entertaining, I would imagine. But I don't know that we can find any great truths out of that game.
So is Jim Harbaugh any closer to closing the gap on Urban Meyer right now?
Well, that's the thing we're going to find out, because this is really the first year that a lot of his recruits will be the starters. And I would say he did a really good job with Brady Hoke's recruits, because Brady Hoke didn't do a very good job with them. But these guys now are the ones that he recruited, the ones that he thinks fit what he does. I would think that they will come along pretty quickly, would be my guess. And then we'll see if they can close that gap. Now, this is a tough year to be closing the gap, because Ohio State is loaded on defense. Offensively, we'll see how much of a difference Kevin Wilson makes calling the plays, but my guess is he's going to make a pretty big difference. So, yeah, I think we'll see a JT Barrett that looks a lot more like his redshirt freshman year. So, this is a tough year to have to close the gap. Plus, you got Penn State. Penn State's only going to be better than it was last year. Now, it may not be as successful as it was last year, because the stakes of Penn State's games are going to be different. You know, Penn State was not a targeted team every stadium it went to last year. This year it will be. Every team that plays Penn State has Penn State circled. So they're going to get a different level from every team they play. So they may be just as good or better, but they may drop one or two because of that. And I also don't like the fact that the way their schedule sets up, they go Michigan at Ohio State at Michigan State. And we saw how horrible Michigan State was. Did you ever think a Mark D'Antonio team would be that bad?
No.
Can you imagine another Mark D'Antonio team being that bad?
No.
So my guess is they're going to be a little bit better too. That's not a road game you want at the tail end of Michigan and Ohio State.
Bob Stoops is gone. Lincoln Riley's in. I'm not breaking news to you. Baker Mayfield's back. Is there any fall off do you expect from Stoops leaving?
I don't think they fall off. I just think the rest of the Big 12 around them has gotten a little bit better. I think Oklahoma State has an offense that they are really excited about. They seem to view it in terms of that 2011 offense, which was great. So, you know, that's an issue. You've got the championship game now where, you know, you've got to beat the second best team in the league twice. Or if you're the second best team, you've got to now beat the best team in the league in the championship game. So that's another challenge. Kansas State's going to be good. I think West Virginia's going to be good with Will Greer playing quarterback. I think TCU's going to be better. Nobody's talking about them at all. Texas is probably going to be better with Tom Herman coaching them. So that's a lot of – there's a lot of landmines ahead of Oklahoma that probably weren't really there last year. Oklahoma State was really good last year. For whatever reason, just didn't play a very good game against Oklahoma. But – I think this is going to be a tougher slog for Oklahoma within the Big 12. And, you know, we'll see what happens. The Big 12 needs some good performances in the non-conference schedule. And I don't think Oklahoma has to go to Columbus and beat Ohio State, but they have to be respectable in that game. Texas doesn't have to go to LA and beat USC, but they have to be respectable in that game. If that happens, and then Oklahoma or Oklahoma State gets through the league and has a loss, I think the committee is going to be okay with that. I think by the end of the season, there'll be a little more respect for the Big 12.
All right, last thing, and I really appreciate your time. I think it's Friday night. Colorado State play one another.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of eyes in this state.
Throw the ball, Bobo!
Yeah.
Run the ball, Bob. Wait, what do we want him to do now? I don't know.
I don't even know. Which one of those two coaches is coaching in the SEC next year?
I wouldn't hire McIntyre.
Because of the situation that happened off the field, or just...
Yeah, he finds out one of his assistants is beating up his girlfriend and promotes him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hire that guy to be the janitor.
What about Bobo? Because everybody holds the Georgia stuff against him. Is that legit?
No. Bobo was a really good offensive coordinator at Georgia. We like to have fun with the run the ball Bobo thing. And yeah, that game at South Carolina, he absolutely should have run the ball. But, no, you look at his track record, his body work there. He was a very good offensive coordinator. And just look what happened when he left. Look at how things kind of fell apart when
yeah.
he left.
Yeah.
So, I think Mike Bobo would make a great SEC coach. And he definitely understands the lay of the land as far as recruiting goes. I think sooner rather than later, he'll make his way back. And, you know, he jokes about when he goes on recruiting trips out west, and he'll go on the in-home visits, and they make him sweet tea, so he feels like he's at home. They won't have to make special trips to make him sweet tea in the next few years, I imagine.
Is there a job that, I mean, obviously the Georgia job was probably the one that he wanted. It's not going to be open.
It's probably not going to happen. Well, look, that could open pretty quickly if Kirby doesn't get him at a championship level. But
he's going to get more than a couple more years.
I think Kirby's going to be okay.
Yeah. Is there a one spot that do you think Bobo fits?
I don't know, because Ole Miss is open. I think Kentucky's okay with Stoops for now, and that's a tough job. So I don't know about that one. What if Mullen were to leave Mississippi State?
Yeah.
I think people are finally getting hip to the fact that Dan Mullen is a really good coach, that he has overachieved almost every year. If Nick Fitzgerald winds up being as good as, numbers-wise as Dak Prescott was, and his rushing numbers are already there, he just needs to improve a little bit as a passer. As a developer of quarterbacks and as a recruiter and developer, I mean, it would be hard not to consider Dan Mullen for some of these potentially big openings that are coming up. Now, he's paid really well at Mississippi State, so that might be a little bit prohibitive, but the question is, can you win a national title there? It's not easy. You're always going to have Alabama there, and as long as Nick Saban's at Alabama, it's going to be a problem. So
Auburn, LSU,
there's a potential that he goes somewhere and that job's open.
Fascinating stuff. Enjoy your first weekend, my man. I appreciate the time.
Yep, thank you, Neil.
Okay, bye. Our thanks to Andy Staples for his time today on the Beer Garden. Great stuff. I know everyone's excited about the first big college football weekend. Hopefully, hearing from Andy and Chris has got you even more excited, whetted your appetite a little bit, and educated you some on what to look for on the first big weekend. We'll be back next week. We'll continue to talk college football. We'll get you ready for the first big NFL weekend, and we'll keep our eye on the baseball races as Labor Day passes and we get into the final month of the Major League Baseball regular season. For the Oxford Crystal, for all of our advertisers, thank you to everybody. Also, again, one more time, thanks to Chris Landry, thanks to Andy Staples, and we'll be back next week with another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Until then, have a great weekend. Happy Labor Day. Talk to you soon.